broadcasting worldwide on internet radio.
Refreshing takes on legal strategies.
Straightforward answers to difficult tax questions.
Independent ideas on building wealth. It's the Refresher Wealth Show with Mark Kohler and Matt Sorensen.
Get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.
Now, here's Mark and Matt.
Welcome, everyone, to the Refresh Your Wealth podcast with Matt Sorensen and Mark Kohler. Mark Kohler is out on assignment today, so you have the pleasure of hearing from Matt Sorensen more. Mark always likes to talk over me, so I'm kind of okay with that, him being gone. But I have Jaron Burgesson, an amazing attorney in our law firm, KQS Lawyers, on the line, who's going to be co-hosting the show with me today. And Jaron, thank you for filling in today.
Yeah, excited to be here. Look forward to it.
Yeah, Jaron has a degree in broadcast journalism. I always let everyone know that when he joins. So now he did get that degree from BYU. So I don't know. You'll have to say whether that was a worthy degree to receive or not.
As you can tell, I'm not really using it. I'm an attorney. So the value of that degree is questionable.
That's true. Well, that's probably a better thing. Okay. Well, it's today's topic is a really important one. And it's actually one that Jaron and I talked this morning. I had a call about it. He had a call about the same dang thing. So I was just feeling it. We should just do this show topic. So we're going to talk about when to use a self-directed IRA versus a solo 401k. We have so many clients self-directing, and there's a lot of these factors and considerations of whether you would choose a self-directed IRA over a solo 401k. And so that's what we're going to dig into today. That's going to be the main topic, and try and unpack that for you, give you some considerations. So you know, if you're out there self-directing, whether you've what should count to set up, or if you're already doing one or the other, maybe you should jump ship and go over to the other side. I don't know. We're just going to break it down for you and give you the real deal information. All right. Now, before we get into the main topic, though, we like to give a tax and legal tip. And today's tax tip, since Mark is not here, and since I only play a tax lawyer on the Refresh Your Wealth podcast, we have Liddell Ayer, CPA, Mark's partner in the accounting firm Kohler & Ayer CPAs, on the line. And he is ready for the tax tip. Are you giving the tax tip, Liddell? You ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Okay, all right, let's play some cool music.
A tax tip you can actually understand and won't put you to sleep.
A tax tip that could save you thousands.
All right, guys, thanks for having me on today. It's been a while since I've been on the podcast, so.
Yeah, first time in 2020, that's for sure.
Hey, it's early.
That's true.
First off, it was good seeing you guys last week, because we had our face-to-face training with the attorneys and the accountants, and
yeah,
kind of putting together our plan for 2020. So that was good to see everybody.
Yeah, that was awesome. We had to hear from Mark Kohler a little much, but otherwise really good.
Yeah, we get to be the stars today without him on.
That's right.
So what I wanted to talk about today is, actually this is happening right now, is I'm actually working on an amended return for a new client that came into our firm. And what I want people to be aware of is it's going to be related to filing status. There's basically four or five ways you can file: single, married filing joint, married filing separate, qualifying widower, head of household. So it depends on whether you're married or single or qualified widower or head of household, depending on how you fit those scenarios. So this scenario was married filing jointly versus married filing separately. And when I first consulted with them, they'd already had their 2018 tax return done. And actually I did the spouse. They got married in 18.
Okay.
And I prepared the spouse's return. And I told them, you need to be aware of what's the correct filing status, married filing joint or married filing separate.
Yeah. I always thought, I think everybody defaults, if you're married, you're going to just file married filing joint, right? Isn't there like a penalty to not or something? Why do I have that presumption?
Well, because generally if you do married filing separately and one spouse itemizes, automatically the other spouse has to itemize.
Okay.
And in this situation, the spouse had kids, or one kid that was in college, and the husband, he had a large business that he sold during the year, you know, for $1 million+. And so they're thinking automatically, well, we don't want to do married filing jointly because, you know, my kid's in college and, you know, I'm going to miss out on, you know, Pell grants, or cause she was lower income. She's going to miss out on some of the government grants for going to college. And I said, well, not so quick. You may want to look at this. You may want to see if married filing separately versus married filing jointly, because your tax savings may pay for all 4 years of college, let alone 1 year.
Yeah.
So they, but anyway, the husband had another accountant doing all his company books and tax return. And so he just stayed with him and did all that. And I told him we need to look at this. And then anyway, somehow it all ended up getting filed. So then I went ahead and filed the spouse's married filing separately. So then they came back and they said, why don't you look at this for us? So I ran the numbers, and, you know, there was a few other mistakes made on the husband's return also. So all in all, that difference would have been about a $40,000+ refund on the federal.
Hmm.
So just doing married filing joint instead of married filing separately. And like I said, they did married filing separately thinking, well, we're going to miss out on these government,
you
know, Pell grants or whatever. When in fact, you know, if they would have had it done correctly, they would have $40,000. That would have easily paid, you know, for the daughter's education expenses.
Sure.
So that's what I'm in the process of doing right now is amending their return. And I'm still going to be able to get them close just from the married filing joint, married filing separately status. I'm still going to be able to get them a $29,000 refund.
Yeah.
And so the things they did miss out on, I'm still going to be able to carry forward and use in 2019 or 2020 or something in the future, but they could have had that additional refund for 18 if it would have been done correctly. So I guess my point is just make sure what your filing status is at the end of the year, you know, and that's when it's determined is December 31st, whether you're single or whether you're married. And then if you're married, is it better to do married filing jointly, married filing separately? You know, and it's a pretty easy process. Like if we're doing your return, our software does it automatically for you. So we can kind of see, you know, because I do kind of have that question once in a while is which is the best way to go? And so I'm easily able to say, oh, married filing jointly saved you $2,800 or whatever the amount is. So just be aware as you're filing your 2019 return, what's the best filing status?
Yeah, I even had a client question me about single. It was a, you know, they were as a couple that was lived together and been together for a long time. They are high income, and they were like, if we get married, we'll have to pay more in taxes. I'm like, no, you don't. You know, I'm like, that's the marriage penalty. The Congress wants to incentivize you to get married, and, you know, as couples, and so they don't, you know, they can't be a penalty to get married. But sure enough, there's like a sweet spot. I should say a sweet spot. A negative sweet spot. There's a nasty spot. There's I don't know what's the opposite there. Anyways,
sour spot.
There you go. I don't know. It seemed like around 500 or 600 grand that if you're single, that you start, if you get married, there's actually there's a marriage penalty. You could be paying more. I had to like fact check them, and I was like, oh, you guys are totally right. And there's some articles on that too. So that's another odd consideration, one that I was surprised by. Do you ever see that, Liddell, and people, single people? Actually, I mean, I think most of them, 9 out of 10, you're going to save taxes when you get married. But it seems to be there's certain income areas where you actually end up.
What it comes down to is the amount of income each one of them makes.
Yeah.
You know, if you got a high income earner on one side and the low income earner on the other side, you know, most likely it's going to be married filing joint would be the best. But you just have, the whole tax world works is it's tax planning and tax strategy and being able to run it both ways and see what the best option is, because it does make a difference.
Yeah.
And this client's been quite surprised. They've just been shocked that I was going to give them that big a refund back.
Yeah. Well, yeah, you're their new best friend now. It's like finding someone money.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks so much, Liddell. Appreciate you coming on. Appreciate the tip.
All right. Thanks, guys.
Okay. Take care. All right. Well, now it is time for a legal tip before we get into the main topic. Jeremy, did you want to give a legal tip, or are you going to defer to me on this one?
I'm gonna defer, and I'll take the ball in the second half.
Okay. All right. Since you did win the coin toss.
Yeah.
All right. Okay. I'm gonna give the legal tip.
A legal tip that you can actually use.
A legal tip where you don't feel like you have to take a shower after.
All right. Well, today's legal tip is about IRA contribution deadlines. And somewhat, you know, goes with self-directed IRA versus solo 401k. I just want to make a couple of quick points on the IRA contribution deadlines. These are April 15th for your traditional IRAs and Roth IRAs. And while you can extend contribution deadlines for certain things like a SEP IRA, if you file a extension on your company return, or a solo 401k, which we're going to talk about today, those, if your company return gets extended, you can extend the contribution deadlines as well for those. So, but the one that cannot be extended that is set in stone is the traditional IRA and Roth IRA. That contribution deadline is April 15th. It's right around the corner. So just keep that in mind. We're starting to see that at directed IRA. People starting to make their 2019, and a lot of people double up and make their 2019 and 2020 contributions at the same time. So we're starting to see those contributions come in. But we always get people coming in and running in the door at April 15th, trying to get their contributions in, and we can help and handle it, as long as, even if you're post-market by the 15th and we don't get it, you know, there's ways we can still legally get it in. But just keep in mind, April 15th, no extension on that for your contributions. So start getting ready for that. All righty. Well, this is a big topic, the main topic that we want to hit today, self-directed IRA versus solo 401k. And I do have a blog article on this that I think is pretty great. And in the blog article, what do you concur, Jerem?
I do. I took a look at it before the show. It's pretty okay. Solid.
All right. Okay. Of course, Jerem's, he's too nice to me. He's got to say that. But it is pretty good. I remember even writing this. It was some good analysis, and a lot of things I go over with clients by phone. So, but Jerem, this is the article, and I'll just let everybody know there's six parts to this. So I've kind of got this six part analysis. Do you know why I didn't go to seven, Jerem?
No. Why didn't you go to seven?
Because I rested on the seventh, you know. I just,
there it is, rested on the seventh qualification, or the seventh category. I like
It. It's not bad, you know. Like you got to try, and you know, I'm working with self-directed IRAs and solo Ks as a topic, you know.
There's limited material there. That's for sure.
That's right.
For humor, anyway.
Yeah. Well, why don't you set this up first, Jerem? You had a consult this morning. Tell me what the typical questions are and what people should be thinking at first and.
Because we get that this question a lot, and you know, this is a lot of times I'll say, you know, hey, I had a consult this morning or this week, when maybe I really didn't, but I've had one recently. No, I actually had this call this morning.
I did too actually. This is legit.
And
not just a figure of speech.
Right. And the question this morning, well, this comes up a lot, and it's in your article too, is some people come and say, do I qualify for, or not do I qualify? I'm trying to decide between a solo 401k and a self-directed IRA. And we can ask them one or two questions and answer that for them quickly if they don't qualify for a solo 401k. So the first consideration is, are you self-employed in some way? And if so, okay, do you have any full-time employees? If the answer to the first question is no, then you can't have a solo 401k. If the answer to the first question is yes, and then the answer to the second question about the employees is yes, then you don't qualify for a solo 401k either. You might be able to, you know, you could have a group 401k or some other type of plan, but not a solo 401k. So before you start, you know, investing a lot of time in just trying to decide between the two, let's make sure you even qualify for a solo 401k, because not everybody does.
Yeah. So a lot of people get filtered out on that first analysis of, do you, can you even make a choice? Like, you know, somebody's like, the choice is yours. There's no choice for you on this, on for some people. So, but you're right. So that's the first qual that is just, and this is part one of my 6-part test here is qualification. Right. So if you want an IRA, you're an IRA is an individual retirement arrangement. It's actually not account. Individual retirement arrangement is the word in the tax code. And if you're an individual, you qualify for a IRA. Congratulations. We all get one of those. We can all qualify for one. But a solo 401k must be established by a business. Businesses adopt and create 401ks for the benefit of their employees. So for those that are self-employed, as Jeremy mentioned, you have a business, you're self-employed, whether this is your S-Corp, your sole proprietorship, your LLC, your C-Corp, whatever. You got a business. That business will adopt the 401k plan for the benefit of you, the great employee. Just like Dunder Mifflin has a 401k plan for Toby and Pam.
Okay? That's right.
That's right. And Jim and all the other great people. So
yeah, even people at corporate, you know, they've got back in New York. They've got one.
Yeah. Yeah. Even, what's the big boss's name?
I can't remember.
Oh, David. I forget. Anyways, you guys know what we're talking about. But the 401k is employer-based. Employers adopt it for the benefit of their employees. All right. So now that's just step one. So I want everybody to think of that. So this is probably one of the most important things here. Just, can I even do a solo K? Because a lot of people, Jerem, come to you and are like, they want a solo K, right?
Right. Right.
But why would people want that? Let's add to that. It's cool, right? I mean, there's some cool things of a solo K.
Yeah. And there are various advantages of a solo 401k over a self-directed IRA. But the biggest one typically is people know, at least theoretically, they can put a lot more into a solo 401k. Their contribution limits are potentially much higher in a solo 401k than they are in an IRA. In an IRA, the most you're going to be able to put away, depending on your age, is $6,000 or $7,000 a year. And that's it. In a solo 401k, it might be $56,000, $57,000, $60,000, depending on your income and depending on your age. There's a bit of a gap.
Yeah. So those over 50 get to put a little extra in on IRAs and 401ks. So that's huge. That contribution rule on $6,000 in an IRA, maybe $57,000 or so in a solo K for 2020. That's a big difference, obviously. So for those really trying to save and stock money and get new contributions in, the solo K is a huge win. I'm definitely into a solo K. On the other hand, if you're like, you know what, I'm not really putting new money in. I'm just working with what I already have. And that's a lot of self-directed IRA clients of ours. You go to the self-directed IRA. You're not trying to max out. You're not putting six in. You're just working with what you have.
Right.
So head over to the IRA side. Or on the other hand, if you're like, I don't have $56,000 to dump in there.
Yeah.
Start with get up to six first. Once you've exceeded six and you've been putting that in every year, then maybe graduate over to the 56. I don't know.
Yeah, I run into that a lot. I'll talk to people and they're all enamored with, hey, I put in $56,000 in a solo 401k.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you can, but do you have $56,000 in cash lying around to do that?
Yeah, right.
And people sometimes forget that. Oh, yeah, you're right. I have to actually have that money set aside to do that or find it by, you know, the deadline to make the contribution, by September or March or whatever it is, depending on what kind of entity you've got. If you're not going to make a contribution, if $6,000 is looking like a lot, then let's not worry about the fact that, yeah, theoretically you might be able to put $56,000 into your solo 401k.
Yeah. Yeah. Good point. Okay. So we hit qualification. So are you self-employed? Let's hit one other point on that though, too. And you mentioned this earlier, Jeremy, is no other employees. So this is, that's part of the solo part of the solo K, is it's meant for kind of a business owner that doesn't have employees. But who else can you have in there? I mean, like you can have a spouse involved or maybe a partner, right? And still qualify.
Right. Spouses, partners. I think anybody in your immediate family that works in the business, I believe that's correct.
Yeah. And our plan document, just, and I realize that other companies are different on that rule, is our solo K does allow for other family members. So I have one client who does Roth 401k accounts for his high school kids who work in the business, and they're in the solo, and that's okay.
Right.
Because they're immediate family, and our plan doc allows for that in our solo K. It's an IRS pre-approved plan document. So, but not every plan document allows for that. So you got to make sure you're looking out for that.
Right. I've seen that too. And then the other consideration, the sort of finer point, is it's employees, W-2 employees, not 1099 independent contractors. So if you have people that you know, work as contractors, and they really are contractors, not employees, and that's a whole nother show topic.
Yep.
But then you would still qualify if they're 1099 and not W-2.
Yeah. Okay, so we know I can add, but my spouse can be involved in the business, my kids, I can have partners, and I'm still cool in the solo okay. I'm not phasing out. Now, if you do have other employees that are at least 21 that work for you more than 19 hours a week and have worked for you for at least a year, you got to stop doing the solo okay. And sometimes we'll have that of clients that are like, well, I got an assistant and now they've worked me for a year, or I already have a few employees. It's like, solo K doesn't work anymore for you. You're not gonna be able to do solo K because of that employee issue. You're not. And the reason that works that way is because this great, generous plan you're doing for yourself, you're gonna have to offer to them, and you'd be insane to do that.
Right.
Okay, anything else on qualification, or maybe let's hit a couple people. Give me a couple examples of people who are a good fit for a solo K.
Yeah, I mean, the people that I see it are, I see real estate agents, you know, they make commissions and
they don't have employees.
Right. They don't have employees. Yeah. They're 1099. They don't have anybody that they're paying W-2. People that do consulting work. Right.
Yeah.
I've got a bunch of different clients I do consulting with, and they all are 1099 me. You know, those are two that I can think of off the top of my head.
What about people that have a kind of a day job with a 401k and they also have a side business though? Maybe they do some consulting on the side.
Right.
Can they do the solo K?
Yeah, they can have a solo 401k. Now you don't double your contribution limits if you've got two plans. So
you
can still bump into contribution limit issues, and you have to make sure you're not exceeding what you can put in. But yeah, you can have both. You got your W-2 day job that, maybe max out what you're going to get matched on at your day job, and then have the solo 401k and do the rest of your investing or your saving for retirement there.
Okay. Now maybe talk about what qualifies as a business. Sorry, I'm just drilling down more on this qualification, because the more and the more I think about it, this is really, in terms of choices you have, this is really what it boils down to, is do you qualify for the solo K?
Right.
So what's some type of business that is not a good fit? Like, people are like, well, I have an LLC. Like, what's some examples of ones that don't work for a solo K?
Yeah, the biggest one we see with all of the real estate investor clients that we have is, hey, I've got rental properties. I own 12 rentals.
Yeah.
Is that not a business? Well, it's a business, but it's not earned income. It's passive rental income. So if you don't have earned income there, then that's not going to work. There is a way, and Mark's got a video on this, I think you might too, about paying yourself a management fee to then qualify, but yeah, you got to know everything that goes into that if you're going to do that. But the rentals in and of themselves, or I've got a business where I loan money to people and I get interest income, that's probably not going to qualify either.
Yeah. Yeah. So in those kind of more investment company structures, you know, the rentals or private lending, interest income, you know, you're going to have to do a management structure and do a sole proprietorship management company that gets management income for managing your rentals or your loan portfolio. And And generally we would never do that because you're essentially converting investment income that you don't pay Medicare and Social Security tax on over to ordinary income that you do pay Medicare and Social Security on.
Right.
Call it a management fee. So that it's kind of clunky. We don't love it, but it can be a band-aid if someone's hell bent on a solo K. And we've helped some clients work through that and make sure it's legit. So
yeah. And I want to pump that message out there as much as possible. Cause I've run into a bunch of clients lately who are telling me that someone, I don't know who it is, they're hearing it from somewhere that, hey, I should be paying myself a management fee for managing my own rentals. No, you shouldn't. not unless you're wanting to do this strategy. So I've run into that a bunch. So everyone within the sound of my voice, unless you're wanting to do a solo 401k and it otherwise makes sense, don't pay yourself a management fee for managing your own rental properties.
Yeah, definitely don't. You're just asking, you're paying more tax to do that. That's
right.
Just voluntarily send more money to the government.
Yeah.
That's effectively what you're doing. Okay.
I think that might be Bernie Sanders' plan, not to get political, but you know, there are people.
He did just win. Didn't he win in New Hampshire?
Yeah, he won. Yes, he did. He won.
I'm feeling the burn. I'm feeling it.
Yeah. Hey, I'm not saying it's a bad thing, but if that's where Bernie might want you to be.
Yeah. That's part of the Bernie Sanders tax plan. Yeah. Okay. So, all right. So I think we hit qualification, and let me just summarize this just so everybody's, you know, just try and put it more direct. The solo K is awesome if you can do it, but not everyone fits in it. It's kind of like a round hole, and we're a lot of triangles and square pegs out there. We don't fit in it, and you can't just cram yourself into it. It's not going to work. But if you're a round peg, it's awesome. You fit nicely into it. It's going to work. So we like it for certain clients that fit into it that are self-employed with a real business. And this could be a new business. It doesn't have to be in existence for a long time, but it needs to be legit. You can't just be like, well, I set up an LLC or I set up an S-Corp. Okay, right. Do you have business activity in it? Because if you don't, there the Hobby Loss rules are going to apply. It's going to get shut down by the IRS and your 401k plan is going to have the same treatment. It's going to get shut down too. So make sure it's a legit business. But if you're self-employed with a real business, no employees other than partners, spouse, or family members, like immediate family members, it can be a great, great fit. So. But for everyone else, there's still the IRA. Don't stress.
Right.
Now, there's some people who are lucky enough that get to choose. There are some people that are like, I do qualify for a solo K, but I can also just do an IRA. So what do I do?
Right. Well,
let's keep talking.
Yeah.
all right. Now, you can do traditional and Roth IRAs, of course. Can you do that in a solo K, Jeremy?
Yeah, you can. There can be a traditional and a Roth component. The contributions that you make as an employee can either be traditional or Roth dollars. The contributions, the profit sharing or the match from the employer has to be traditional to start with, but can be converted later. Mm,
yeah. Yeah. So in both scenarios, I think they're kind of even there. You know, I can do 6,000 in my Roth IRA, or I can put in Roth dollars into my solo K. If, you know, we love Roth accounts, as everyone knows. So you got the flexibility to do Roth in both.
Right.
What about the cost though? I mean, what's easier and cost wise, what do you think?
Yeah, certainly cost wise, it's maybe two or three times as much to start with. Although you can bring those fees down, but typically about that much more to set up a solo 401k. There's going to be an approved plan document that has to be put in place. The 401k gets an EIN. You're going to go set up a bank account in the name of the 401k with your bank or your credit union. So there's certainly a little bit more legwork and more cost to start with. It's not prohibitively more, but you know, a few hundred dollars more for sure to set up a solo 401k than it is to go do a self-directed IRA typically.
Yeah. And I think just the work on a solo K is more. What you have to keep in mind is one of the perks of a solo K is you can be trustee of it. So as Jeremy mentioned, you're going to have your own bank account in the solo K's name, and your trustee is the business owner. I mean, you're trustee of the solo K. So you don't have to send it to an IRA custodian like directed IRA to like where we hold your cash. You know, in an IRA, we have to hold title custody to your assets. But in a solo K, you don't have that requirement. You can self-trustee it where you hold custody of things. So you have a bank account in the name of the sole, okay, and you sign off on it as trustee. So because you're in control, that does give you some power, but also comes with some responsibility. Mm-hmm. Because now you got to be tracking your stuff. You got to be doing your tax reporting on it. We don't hold it at directed IRA or directed trust company. So we can't do the tax reporting on it. So if you convert to Roth or you take a distribution, I'm not processing it through our accounts. So we're not sending out the 1099Rs and stuff like that we do for all of our IRA clients. So there's more work in a solo K. I mean, we can help with some of that tax reporting if needed, but it's kind of as needed and you pay separately for it. So right. Just keep in mind, a solo K, you're signing up for a little more work there. It's not too bad as you're putting money in, but once you start converting or taking distributions, the solo K, you're going to have some accounting paperwork and some forms you're filing to the IRS on that.
Right, right. And I've had people that are kind of from the Wall Street world that are thinking about doing solo 401ks, and they've asked me, well, what platform does your solo 401k use? There ain't no platform. The platform is you figure it out, you know, basically, yeah. because you're the trustee. Yeah, there can be a bank account. If you want to go open up a brokerage account with it, you typically can. But there's not like some platform that's being used or you know, a list of funds that you can invest in with your solo 401k when you go set up the bank account at, you know, Chase or Wells Fargo or your local credit union.
Yeah. Yeah. And a lot of clients do a brokerage account with it, and that's fine. You can, you know, every broker dealer has a solo 401k platform where you can bring your own documents and they basically just set you up a brokerage account. It's pretty easy. But of course, most clients are coming to us to self-direct, buy real estate or invest in private companies or notes and things like that. So,
right.
Trying to think anything else on the trustee topic and just how it operates. I think that's the big difference is essentially your trustee. Oh, what about tax reporting? On an IRA, I'll talk about that at least. You know, we file your 5498 for the IRA every year. Like I said, we'll do the 1099R, but, is there any tax return required for the solo K, Jerem?
Yeah, if you've got more than $250,000 in assets in the 401k plan, then it has to file a form 5500, and I think it's almost always a 5500 EZ if right. I'm remembering the numbers correctly. Yeah, for the solo 401k.
Yeah, and so that, you know, we do those too, but that adds some costs. So if you have a bigger solo K that's got 250,000 or more, and we have lots of clients that have that, they've been contributing and maxing out for, you know, a number of years, or they rolled over prior employer dollars or traditional IRA dollars into the solo K.
Right.
By the way, you cannot roll Roth IRA money into a solo K, even if you have a Roth 401k in the solo K, just Roth IRA dollars are always stuck as Roth IRA, just a little side note, but
yeah.
Okay, so I got a 5500 EZ tax return for the solo K. That's if you have over 250,000, like Jerem said, and we do that for actually $250 here at the law firm. If you need help in getting the 5500 EZs done.
Yeah. And on this, the trustee thing, I mean, part of the freedom, right, of the solo 401k is when you're the trustee, obviously in the IRA world, people will hear the terms checkbook IRA or checkbook control IRA, and that's the LLC that's owned by the IRA that then gives you the authority to, you know, control without going through the custodian, you know, transactions. You already have that. You have that without necessarily a separate LLC in the 401k because you're the trustee. So if you want to go make investments directly in the name of the 401k, you can, and there's no third party custodian to sign documents or fill out forms in the 401k.
Yeah. And for that reason, a lot of people in California in particular love the solo K. And frankly, of those who set up the solo K, Californians love it more than anybody, because if they want checkbook control of an IRA, they got to do an LLC and they're paying $800 to the California Franchise Tax Board.
Right.
The only problem I've seen a lot of people stretch and they really don't have a business. Or they're, you know, the solo K is just, it's not the right fit for them, unfortunately.
Right. Can't have a 401k. We talked about it, but you can't have a solo 401k just because you want to, just because you think it's a good idea. Got to be self-employed.
Yeah. You got to have a real business. Okay. Let me hit just one other point here on the list. I think I want to let you know, we're hitting the six. We already talked about qualification. That's the first consideration. Contributions. Both have traditional and Roth, cost and setup, That's five. Or sorry, that's four. And then five is the custodian requirement. So the custodian requirement is kind of a pro and a con, I'll be honest.
Yeah. I
mean, you know, we're a custodian.
Right.
So, but on the IRA, it's a con because you're going to pay us, right? I mean, you have to have a custodian for your IRA, whether you're using Charles Schwab or you're using Directed IRA or you're using some, you know, any other of our competitors. Like, you have to have a custodian for your self-directed IRA. In the solo K, you don't have to. You know, you can, like we said earlier, you can self-trustee it. You're administer of it. You handle everything. Nobody holds the assets or the cash. You're operating it directly out of the solo K's name as trustee. Now, the downside, I'll say, the pro of the custodian is, well, we do the tax reporting. I'm sending your 5498 to the IRS automatically. We're sending the 1099Rs to take distributions or Roth conversions to the IRS automatically. Like, we're doing that for you in an IRA. In a solo K, it's an added-on service. It's a different thing. I'm not filing it with everyone else's accounts. We're doing it a one-time thing for each person. So it's a little more work on the solo Ks. And so that's just because there's no custodian who is custodying the funds that automatically reports it. Okay. Give us the last point I have here, and Jeremy, I think you can probably summarize this better than I, is the investment details. Like, when I'm investing in real estate or other popular self-directed assets, what's different in an IRA or solo K? Where is there any differences, if any?
I mean, the main difference is that, well, there's a couple, but one of the big differences is that the 401k, again, you're doing all of that. You don't have to have, you're doing all of that in the name of the 401k, signing documents as the trustee of the 401k. You don't have to send it to the custodian for them to sign the documents to close on a piece of real estate. That's a big one. There's also, and this is a little technical, but if you are borrowing money to purchase real estate, which you can do in either self-directed IRA, solo 401k, the account can take a loan, non-recourse loan, and then purchase that real estate. You do that in a self-directed IRA, then the profits that piece of real estate spits off mm-hmm. are at least some of those profits, the amount that's attributable to what you borrowed, is going to be subject to this unrelated debt financed income tax, UDFI for short.
Yeah.
You do the same thing in a solo 401k, the same way, the same non-recourse loan. When that piece of real estate spits off income, rents, or you sell the property for a profit later with, you know, before you pay off the loan, mm-hmm. there is no UDFI on that profit in the 401k.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's a huge benefit, obviously, to the solo 401k. If you're buying leveraged real estate, that exemption only works for leveraged real estate. I had clients trying to use it on notes where they were having someone loan their solo K money and then they would reloan the money out, and it doesn't work for that. This is only for leveraged purchase of real estate. And that's a big deal. I mean, that's a big distinction. UDFI is not the end of the world for IRA clients. We have lots of clients who run into it. It's usually not that big of a tax. You get capital gains rates when you sell. You only pay the tax on the debt part of the deal, which is money you didn't have in the account to begin with. So, but it's definitely a sweet perk that the solo K's got.
And I like to tell people, because you're right, it's not people trying to do anything wrong. I think people just sometimes misunderstand that exemption. And the way I put it is, look, this is a loophole. It's not like a tunnel to drive a truck through. So it's not that there's no UBIT in the 401k at all. It's hey, when you borrow money, you'll leverage an investment to purchase real estate. Then there's going to be this exemption to the UDFI. It's not any bigger than that.
Yeah. Yeah. And that's that. Many people's downfall is taking a good idea too far. And I tell clients too, I like to say, you're coloring outside of the lines. Like this is, you got to stay really tight in the lines here on some of these exemptions. And some people get a little, you know, a little too creative.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, why don't you summarize it, Jerem, here, and what you would tell someone in like just this analysis of self-directed IRA versus solo K, and I'll take a stab at it and we'll just call it a heck of a good show.
Yeah, I think so. So in the final analysis, if you qualify for a 401k, and to me, really the threshold is do you want to make bigger contributions than what you would make to a self-directed IRA? And are you thinking about leveraging to purchase real estate? If the answer to either one of those questions is yes, then to me, and it, again, if you qualify, the solo 401k is sort of a no-brainer. It's going to get you what you want. It's going to allow you to put away more, save on taxes with the UDFI exemption if you're leveraging. And just real quickly, I'll throw this out here. It's not on your list, but you can take a loan, a personal loan, a participant loan from a 401k of up to half of what's in there with a cap of $50,000, which is not. And then you go use it however you want. You want to put it in your business. You want to take a vacation. You want to blow it on the roulette wheel in Vegas. You can do whatever you want. It's your money. You got to pay it back. And there are rules about how to pay it back. But that's not even an option in a self-directed IRA.
Yeah. Great, great point. Okay. Well, I was just going to try to add my own little thing, but I had agreed with everything you said. I don't have anything to add besides that. The only thing I'll say is a lot of times I like to, when a client's asking this, I like to say, slow down. What are you investing in? Like, what's the investment going to be? And sometimes I'll have a client that could qualify for a solo K that's like, oh, I'm going to do some private money lending on, you know, funding the rehabs on some fix and flips. I'm getting 10% interest in 2 points. Okay. Just do an IRA. It's so much easier. It's going to, it's just clean and easy. You don't got to worry about all the other stuff on the solo K. The solo K has no benefit to you in that scenario, you know? Right. And so a lot of times we can just narrow it down depending on what you're planning to invest in. And it's just, it's an easy call. So,
yeah.
Okay. Well, Jerem, I appreciate you jumping on. I think the Alumni Association at BYU is very proud of your performance today and that broadcast journalism degree.
I appreciate that.
I'll send them a note. I'm sure they care what I think.
Yes. Send them a nice letter on my behalf.
Okay, I'll send it. I'll put on the law firm's letterhead.
Yeah, company letterhead. Would you?
Yeah,
thank you.
Yeah, you'd be surprised what type of reaction you get when you send someone law firm letterhead. okay, well, thanks everyone for being with us today. We appreciate it. Mark will be back, of course. I know 90% of you listen for Mark, and that's okay. But I understand that. I do too. I freaking love the guy. So he'll be back, of course, next week. And keep listening. If you're loving the show, give us a 5-star review on iTunes, Stitcher, Spotify, wherever you're listening to us. We appreciate it. And we'll see you next week.
Thanks for listening to another hour of refreshing strategies to better live your American dream.
Don't forget to get your free copy of Mark and Matt's ebooks and sign up for their weekly free newsletter with important tax deadlines and articles at refreshyourwealth.com.